Welcome back, everybody. This is Oscar Talk with Chris Tapley of I almost say Chris Tapley of Thompson on Hollywood. Of In Contention, and Ann Thompson of Thompson on Hollywood. One day I'm going to say Chris Thompson and Ann Tapley. Just watch. Okay, this week we've got Megamind opening up tomorrow, and Ann put up a tweet. We're recording this on Thursday, by the way. Ann put up a tweet that said she hated the movie, which I have to ask her point blank right now. What's up with that?
You know, there's two kinds of DreamWorks animated movies, and there's the kind that I love, which are much more edgy and classical and fun and really well written and really well animated. And I would put, you know, Kung Fu Panda and How to Train Your Dragon in that category. And then there's the more pop culture, let's be hip and cool and appeal to the boys kind of movies. And by the way, they're always well animated. This is not an issue of execution. I recognize that Megamind is a commercial movie, but I already saw Despicable Me this year, and I would like to tell you it's the same movie, and Despicable Me was better.
I actually think Megamind is leagues better than Despicable Me. But it's interesting that you mentioned those two kinds, because I actually thought that Megamind was the perfect blend of the two approaches, really.
Well, it's better than those sort of Madagascar Shark Tale kind of movies,
right,
which make me cringe, you know, make me want to dive under my seat. But or even the later, you know, as far as I got with the sort of Shrek sequels, although I certainly loved the first Shrek. I mean, that was a great movie. They do this really well. I recognize the craftsmanship involved. It's just not. I was sitting there very stolidly not amused. I really wasn't amused, and I was bored, and I fell asleep at a certain point.
Wow.
And I really wasn't. Whereas Despicable Me was utterly charming, and I thought it was extraordinarily well written and executed and beautiful. This movie also, I'm tired of these superhero, you know, retreads. I mean, we how many of these movies? There's Super and there's Kick-Ass and now there's another one, you know, where people want to be superheroes, and I'm just sort of rolling my eyes. It's all terribly familiar.
If you do it better, I think there's virtue in that, and I frankly thought this was better than The Incredibles.
No way. You are speaking heresy, sir.
Sorry. I mean, The Incredibles is just a very arbitrary film to me. I've never thought, I think we've talked about this, but I've just never felt the same kind of power behind that film as I do the other Pixar efforts.
I love that movie. The Incredibles is brilliant, and it was a big advance in its day when it first came out. It was extraordinarily unusual for for any kind of animated film to be stylized in 3D like that, the way they did it. It was a big departure from what they had done before with human characters.
I'll give you that. It was unusual. I don't think that unusual necessarily immediately equates to quality.
It was great. It was great. I mean, I should give you more juice than it was great, but I think we should move on.
Okay. That's Anne saying she does not like Megamind, everybody. You saw The Way Back.
I did. I finally did, and I was just crafting or attempting to complete a post about it. The state of mind that I'm in right now is that I have so many different things sort of pummeling me from
Tell
so
me
many
about
different
it.
Directions. There's the AFM, and there are all these announcements, and there's AFI Fest, and what am I going to go to see there? And many of the films at AFI Fest have already played other festivals, so I may not go to that many things because I just don't seem to be able to keep my head screwed on straight right now. And then there's the Britannia Awards tonight, which I have to literally go to as soon as we hang up the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always a fun sort of Academy-ish, even though it's BAFTA. It's an occasion that you can glean you can learn things. The Way Back played for me really well. I would not have wanted to see it ideally in this tiny little boxy room at Raleigh.
I'm really fascinated to know who the supposed journalist is that requested that room.
I don't know. I didn't see who. I mean, I saw Sasha Stone there. That was about it.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been her.
But we, I liked it a lot better than she did. I thought it was extraordinary filmmaking, and as you know, and I'm a sucker for a good director, and Peter Weir is one of the great directors. And this is an extraordinarily sprawling, epic. Journey that is moving and disturbing and relentless. And now I understand what you meant about all the walking, but it's still a triumph. If you could put it on a double feature in a way with 127 hours.
Exactly. I saw it the same day as I did 127 hours in Telluride.
And you could even put it on a double feature with Meek's Cutoff, which also involves lots of walking and people who don't know where they are and you know, a real sense of the triumph of the will, of the human will against extraordinary odds. So except this one has great has much more going on, I would say, than Meek's Cutoff is a much more refined kind of formalist exercise. This has people fighting with each other and very different people from very different countries who were in the Siberian Gulag, you know, crammed together. And I agree with you, Colin Farrell.
Fantastic.
He's so great. He's like a Russian criminal with tattoos, and he's totally sociopathic.
You completely buy him.
Oh yeah, no, he's very dangerous and very charming at the same time. You really like him. It's an extraordinary performance, actually. Ed Harris is the one, though, that I think if the movie is seen by enough actors, he could get nominated because the emotion. Yeah. Is with him. And now I understand what you meant by Jim Sturgess. Jim Sturgess is an odd, you're right, he's the leader and everything, and he carries the story without actually delivering the performance that another actor might have been able to do in this role. And I'm not sure where he went wrong. What do you think?
Well, I don't think he went wrong. It's very much by design. I asked Peter Weir about that specifically, and he wanted somebody who would not be this kind of typical bravura leading performance, because it's the kind of thing where he's a character who grows into the role of being a leader. He's just a regular guy throughout the course of the movie, and so he didn't want something to distract from that. He didn't want someone that would be this big powerhouse star performance. And so in that light, given that
no, that explains it.
Willful, you know, I think that it's he doesn't go wrong, and I appreciate that. It keeps it very much an ensemble kind of feel too, rather than someone kind of spearheading. But that's me. But I feel the same way about Ed Harris. After I saw it the second time, actually, I walked away thinking, well, as great as the showy performance from Farrell is, the real arc that is in the middle of this movie that is fascinating is Ed Harris and Saoirse Ronan.
It holds the whole thing together.
Yeah.
I think it's the through line that and the whole question of what you learn in the course of the movie is who lost who. You know, you learn a lot of the backstory in the course of the movie, and the woman played by Saoirse Ronan is the conduit for people communicating with each other in a way that they never would have done otherwise. There's a lot going on in this movie. I liked it a lot, but it is a tough slog for people. And I was having a conversation with someone today. I think that this is the kind of movie they would have made in Hollywood many times over. They did make this kind of movie, but it is, in a way, audiences don't know how to handle this kind of film anymore. Now, the Academy may.
Right.
The Academy may appreciate it has scope, it has incredible writing, it has incredible performances. They're going to appreciate the craftsmanship. But the question is, will they see it, and can Newmarket get it out there and get attention for it? Now, Cynthia Swartz is working on it, which is a good thing. But I find it really depressing that a movie of this caliber is being knocked around like a cast off that nobody wants, like
Tell
a hot
me
potato.
About it. Tell me about it. It's depressing.
I think it's really disturbing, and it's a sign. It's sort of like an Inarritu's Beautiful, too. I mean, it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no market for taking chances on difficult and challenging material, the kind of material that Academy movies are made of, the kind of material that The Hurt Locker was. Mm-hmm. And Summit took a chance on The Hurt Locker, and they went for it.
Yeah, I mean, and by the way, it's not like The Way Back is just this extravagantly overspent movie, like $29 million. I mean, can you believe that after seeing it?
No, I can't. But that's still, I recognize, unfortunately, how much, how over, how big that budget really is in this market in terms of
sure.
what it could be expected to return.
Yeah, exactly. That's, you know? I mean, that yeah, and goes without saying. I understand that, I guess, but just says a lot about Peter Weir, I think, as a filmmaker. To be able to do it for that budget, because that while that might not be the kind of thing that would yield a return, this kind of movie, this is the kind of movie you'd expect to just cost so much, and they got smart with it, I guess, with where they filmed. I mean, they substituted like Morocco for Mongolia and things like that.
Yeah, no, I saw that they really did. Well, I'll be curious to see, you know, how that one plays out.
Yeah.
Now, this is the week that the new Hollywood Reporter came out. And the big glossy giant scale Hollywood Reporter with Julia Roberts on the back. And they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 actresses on the front. And they've got a podcast, a video of it on the site.
Right.
They've got Amy Adams from The Fighter, mm-hmm. Nicole Kidman from Rabbit Hole, Hilary Swank from Conviction, Natalie Portman from Black Swan, Helena Bonham Carter from King's Speech, and Annette Bening from The Kids Are All Right. And I looked at this and I thought, okay, these are the names. These are the people that they could get to put on the cover, the stars that they could get representing, you know, the real movies that are in contention
mm-hmm.
To a degree. But I don't think these 6 actresses represent the best actress race at all.
Is it supposed to be a lead actress thing, though, or is it supposed to be actresses? I mean, I think it's just kind of like, here are some ladies.
It's a hodgepodge.
Yeah.
And you know, of this group, the only two contenders that are for sure, I mean, 3, I guess. I mean, everybody's, it's an interesting, it just fascinates me how everybody's just, of course, Natalie Portman is a contender for best actress because, you know, we say so. I mean, I'm still waiting. I'm going to go see The Black Swan at the AFI Fest because I want to see how it plays.
Right.
This is, you know, look at how 127 Hours is playing. I mean, there's some issues there with people fainting at every single screening, except I've been told Austin, Texas, where they're made of tougher stuff, you know?
Well, you know, at the end of the day, well, I think I feel okay about Natalie, but again, I feel the same as you do. I do want to see how that plays outside of this kind of vacuum. But as far as that cover goes, I think we could see 5 of those people nominated at the end of the day, and the fifth for me is not Swank. Yeah, I was going to say the 5th for me might actually be Amy Adams, because I know they legitimately think they can get both of them nominated, her and Melissa Leo. And they did it with Babel, they did it with Up in the Air, so they're going to push them equally.
But this is the same argument I made before. Who has actually seen The Fighter?
I've talked to people that are not vested interests that have seen The Fighter, but yeah, granted, most of this comes from...
Have you seen a journalist?
Yes, I have.
Who's seen The Fighter?
Yes, I have.
And of somebody you trust?
Yes.
And they said totally?
Totally what?
It's in?
This person was reserved somewhat, at least as far as like things like director and screenplay are concerned. But yeah, I mean.
You're saying performances?
No, I'm saying picture.
Out of 10?
Yeah.
But out of 5 actresses for best actress? Amy Adams is one of the 5?
Well, no, it'd be a supporting thing.
Exactly.
I'm saying both for supporting.
Okay. That makes sense.
The two supporting actresses for Babel, the two supporting actresses for Up in the Air, they think they can do it with this as well. So, but Hilary Swank is probably the one that's kind of not really in the picture anymore.
I agree. Not because she isn't perfectly good in the role. And she's fine in the role.
Yeah.
It's just that she's been there, done that, and that's a terrible reason for someone to be disqualified. The real reason is because, and I'm not saying she's disqualified, I'm saying she has a tough race to fight here because conviction has not gone over.
Yeah.
And Helena Bonham Carter, I think, definitely is going to get in for supporting.
Yeah, she'll be good. She'll be fine.
But in terms of the best actress race, that you just have the three, Kidman, Portman, and Bennett.
Well, that's why I ask, are they trying? I mean, it doesn't say best actress on the issue. I guess it just says actress roundtable. I mean, like you say, they're probably just hedging or whatever. But
yeah. Anyway, this issue is full of stuff, and I have plowed through it in a sort of superficial way through the front and the back of the book, which are sizable, and all the luxury ads and trade ads and everything. And they put a lot of work into this. I mean, I can tell you how much work this represents. And I have to assume that the later editions of this, they have to put one of these out every single week.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine that they're going to be 153 pages.
Yeah, that has to be like just a here's our first issue kind of thing, right?
Yeah, but they have reviews. They have Todd. He likes Megamind also.
Oh, he does.
Uh-huh. And Kirk Honeycutt on Morning Glory, which I don't see until Monday. They've got TV. They've got a review of Walking Dead, which I loved. The latest zombie movie. They've got Todd McCarthy reviewing the series that's playing out on Turner Classic Movies, Moguls and Movie Stars.
Right. How's the advertising?
Lots and lots of ads.
Yeah.
You know? They've even got a theater review from David from the other David, the other critic that was laid off from Variety, David Rooney, there's a lot of Variety people here. Bill Higgins is in here, and but they have you know, there's just, I mean, just to fill the, you know, they've got some sort of looking back classic stories. They have a big Anatomy of a Contender on the King's Speech,
mm-hmm.
which played at my class last night.
Yeah, played at your class.
So I showed it to sneak previews, and I had a feeling it would be the best movie of the 10 that I showed, and that it would go over really well. I've been doing this for about 5 years, and I can say without any hesitation, and I've shown a lot of great movies there that went on to be Oscar contenders. That's just the best response I've ever seen of any movie I've ever shown there.
Mm-hmm.
They were cheering, and a huge applause, sustained. I mean, this movie has won audience prizes at one festival after another.
Right.
I have to say, it's something to do with the upstairs downstairs quality that it has. This
like the Gosford Park kind of thing.
Yeah, where yeah. they're really going. It's you're getting close to the royal family, and you actually have this situation where it's very authentic, and it is based on a real story. It really happened, and real diaries and everything. That the shrink, it's basically the shrink who's the speech. It's a shrink and speech therapist going up against this uptight royal protected guy who would never talk to someone like him, much less be in his house. It's
mm-hmm.
an extraordinary. Thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I still feel like it's the clear front runner.
I agree with you.
Not really sure what would knock it off its perch either.
I don't think anything. I don't see, The Social Network will get in there. I mean, it's obviously a very strong contender, but I can't see, unless True Grit turns out to be extraordinary.
Yeah. And I feel strongly about The Way Back, but it's got, it's in a somewhat precarious situation.
Yes, exactly. So. If it was being handled by Sony Pictures Classics or Focus or Searchlight or you know, Miramax, the old Miramax, I mean, then we could take it, you know, give it a real shot.
You know, I just saw that they sent out another screening invite for that, and it's at the Sunset Screening Room.
I know. Well, that's just that's part
the worst
of the,
room.
You know, those
the
are
town.
The two worst rooms in the city, the Raleigh and the small Raleigh. It was not even the big Raleigh; it was the small Raleigh.
It's cost effectiveness. You know, when you have money, you have money. When you don't, you don't.
Yep.
But I guess it takes people like us to keep talking about it, right?
We're gonna tell everybody they gotta see it. Yeah.
let's shimmy on over to just a couple of questions. We're gonna do a short podcast this week. Anne has to leave us for more important things. Danny King asks, "Do you guys think that Get Low is losing enough steam to the point where Duvall could get left out? I'm thinking of adopting this mindset simply because the film was distributed theatrically at such a down time." Okay. Well, we're actually recording this on a day that I've just come back from sitting down with Duvall. They're bringing him back around. They're certainly keeping the fire stoked. So no, I don't think that it's lost enough steam that we need to discredit his chances. What do you think?
I think that the Sony people know what they're doing. They're pushing a movie that was very well liked, that has done well. Robert Duvall gives the performance of his career. The older Academy members are going to love it, and he's in my front runner category for best actor. This is a long haul. This is not about something opening earlier in the year and getting forgotten. And they're obviously tub thumping and getting some more attention. They offered me a Sissy Spacek interview, which I didn't have time to do, and you know, they're working it.
Yeah, I mean, it's And by the way, there's stuff that goes on behind the scenes that you don't necessarily see play out in the media. He's doing plenty of guild screenings, getting standing ovations every time, doing Q&As and such, as he would. So, yeah, I think he's still in a good spot. Similarly, W11 says, "Setting Oscar politics aside, all that talk about age being due and what the Academy thinks or will vote on, of the performances given by Duvall in Get Low, Eisenberg in Social Network, Firth in The King's Speech, Franco in 127 Hours, and Gosling in Blue Valentine, which do you believe is the most worthy of the Best Actor Oscar right now?" So, what do you think about those that we've seen that are the front runners? Which would you pick?
I'm not going to say worthy as much as I'm going to say that I think it's going to be Colin Firth's to lose this year, just because of the double whammy of Single Man and the fact that he is so good in The King's Speech.
But you don't want to pick a favorite?
I'm picking him as my favorite.
Okay. As your personal pick?
Like everything, my favorite, and what I think will win.
I think out of that bunch, Ryan Gosling gives the best performance far and away. So if you're asking me which one of those I think deserves it, I think Ryan Gosling is actually something of a mini revelation in Blue Valentine. Not that we don't already know he's a great actor, but he's doing something that few people are doing. Let's ask one more question. I took a few of them down really quickly before we started. Okay, we addressed the way back. We addressed that. Okay, we'll end with this one. John Gilpatrick asks, "Kind of a random question, but I was wondering what you and Anne think is the biggest flaw in the Oscar voting process and how you'd recommend fixing it. Anything leap to mind for you?"
Well, I'm not a big fan of the 10 Best Picture nominations at all. I think it doesn't work, and I hope they give it up eventually. That's my biggest... I think that I'd like to see them go back to 5. I think it means more. I think it's... I don't think what they had hoped to accomplish is being accomplished with this system.
I would say, and I've always felt this way, and this is more of an issue less with the votership than it just is the idea of being an Academy member, I've always had an issue with being a member for life, no matter what. Now, there are members of the Academy that don't do a damn thing, really, anymore. They're members at large. They have to be tracked down by all the various publicists looking to pimp their movies to them, but I just think there's something to be said for being active in the industry that you are voting as far as what is the best of that industry. And so I've always felt that, you know, that should be reevaluated. But that's me.
I've always loved the idea that Dolores Hart, who starred opposite Elvis... No. Yeah. Where the Boys Are. I want to say Dolores Hart was starred opposite Elvis Presley. In she's a nun, and she's still a voting member, and she's in some convent somewhere. And she takes it very seriously, and she looks at all the movies and all the screeners, and I think that's very cool.
If you take it seriously, fair enough. I don't.
How do you measure it? That's the issue for me. I mean, you're bringing up a sort of a subjective kind of, you know, how do you do that?
Where the Boys Are, George Hamilton.
Thank you.
I had to
George
look it up too.
Hamilton. That's what I was gonna say, but I had Elvis in there for some reason. I think she was in a movie
She's
with
probably
Elvis
in an Elvis movie
too.
At some point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we'll wrap it up there, I guess. Do you need to? You got to flee, right?
Yeah, I do. Okay. But onward and upward.
Yeah. Is there anything that's going on this week you want to mention that you're gonna be doing? AFI stuff.
Well, I said the Black Swan thing.
Black Swan, right? You're not going to any of these parties or anything like that.
I'm gonna go to the if I can hold out long enough after the Britannias, I'll see about the opening night Love and Other Drugs thing. Mm-hmm. But it's a long night ahead of me, so we'll see how I hold out.
All right, well maybe I'll see you.
Are you going to that?
I'm gonna go to. I'm probably just gonna do a couple of the receptions after the screenings. I'm not gonna go to any galas or anything. I actually want to finally check out Uncle Boon Me.
I'm going to go to that. That's Saturday night.
Yeah. Maybe I'll go there.
I'll see you there.
Cool.
Okay.
All right. Then. Next time.
Good night.
Bye.
There's a man in New Orleans, he's a rock and roller, he's a guitar man with a great big soul. He lays down the beat like a ton of cola. He goes by the name of King Creole. You know he's gone, 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 jumping like catfish on a pole. Yeah. You know he's gone, 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 and a hip shaking King Creole. King Creole. When the game starts to do it, it's as good.